We see way more anxiety than I ever anticipated. Way more anxiety than I thought we would see. And a lot of it's because of the societal pressures, but also it's because it's young women. There's a ton of opportunities for women to be in recovery, but not everyone belongs in those environments. You know, they're not conducive to learning those skills to find productivity and find routine and re-engage in kind of that self-love and compassion.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to HopeStream. If you're parenting a teen or young adult child who's experimenting with drugs and alcohol, or who's in active addiction, treatment, or early recovery, you're in the right place. I am Brenda Zane, your host, and a mom who has been there. So just take a minute to exhale, know you're in good company, and just know this is your place to soak up support, understanding, and get some really great information. You can learn more about me and the work I do to serve parents like you at brendazane.com. Today, we are talking all things adolescence. This is a term I first heard when I was talking with the amazing team at SkyTerra Young Adult, and it is the perfect word to explain that difficult transition between adolescence and adulthood. And if you have a creature in this stage, you know what I'm talking about. SkyTerra Young Adult in North Carolina is a different kind of program that is designed more as a wellness retreat. Let me tell you, when I went to the website, I wanted to go there. But it's designed more as a wellness retreat for young adults where their guests learn how to make healthy and sustainable lifestyle changes. That includes things like yoga and meditation. And they also work on really practical things like time management, goal setting, handling conflict, leadership skills, and they also focus on things like cooking and grocery shopping, which might sound basic, but these are things that you know if you have a young person who struggles with executive functioning, anxiety, trauma, all of those things. These day-to-day skills can be really, really challenging. And young people sometimes just need a safe container to practice these things and learn these skills and learn how to deal with the conflict and the difficulties of life. And it's also helpful that they are doing it alongside peers who are also learning. So today you are going to hear from Greg Osler, the clinical director, and Karen Stewart, the executive director at SkyTerra, and they're going to talk about what they see going on with young adults today who are not thriving in that transition to adulthood, why that is for the young people they work with, and what it looks like. We cover things like manipulation, avoidance, withdrawal, and the fear that young people often have of saying, I don't know what to do. It's really, really hard. We also talk about something I am pretty passionate about, which is, what is the deal with 18? Why do we think that magically at the age of 18, our kids are going to be good to go? Especially for kids who have struggled through high school. Maybe they didn't even finish high school. And then the day they turn 18, nothing changes, but everything is supposed to change. There are a lot of expectations about what they should be doing, how they should be functioning, but they still have a lot of needs. There's no magic dust that falls on them on that birthday and completes their executive functioning skills or anything. So we talk about that. Greg also talks about the idea of blowing things up. He explains why he likes to do it and why, as parents, we need to stop avoiding hard conversations and conflict with our kids. I am pretty sure this is one you are going to get so much out of. So lace up your shoes or hop in your car, whatever you do when you have HopeStream in your ears, and let's do this. Enjoy my conversation with Greg and Karen from SkyTerra Young Adult. Welcome, Greg and Karen and Woody, to HopeStream. This is going to be a great conversation. I think you guys have such an interesting perspective and population that you work with. And we're in four different locations, so we'll see how this goes with the recording. But we just kind of go with the flow on HopeStream. So welcome to the podcast.
Awesome, Brenda. So excited to be here with you. Appreciate the opportunity.
That's awesome. Well, let's, before we dive into everything, let's just give folks a background on whoever wants to share and is comfortable, kind of how you came to be doing what you're doing. I always find these little vignettes interesting because it's a unique role that you play. And so I'd just love to hear just a little bit of context for how you got here.
Absolutely. So my name is Greg Osler. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, licensed clinical addiction specialist, and I work on trauma, attachment, and addiction. I've been doing this work for about 15 years, and I was supposed to be a dentist, so I kind of fall into this role by default. I did pre-med, pre-dental in college, and then got kind of spooked, and then jumped into serving people in another way, and then found myself in wilderness therapy as a direct care staff, opening my eyes to what therapy could be. And then because of my own personal traumas I experienced in my teenage years, I avoided therapy, I had therapy, and now I'm that therapist. And so it's been interesting just figuring out how life challenges us in different ways and bringing in those perspectives. And so I've done a lot of work in residential treatment. I've worked in the school systems, and I've been here at SkyTerra for a little over 2.5 years. And we opened a program for wellness with young adults, understanding that we are launching into this weird time of life where we're supposed to be responsible and accountable, yet never really shown how. So we created a program for young adults to teach them how by having the structure and container that's different than mom and dad, getting rid of some of those distractions and using therapy and wellness and life as that platform.
Awesome. From dentistry to therapy. I know. I love it. See, there's always some interesting story, which I love to hear. Karen, do you feel like sharing a little bit about how you got here?
Sure. So I don't have a dental background, but I do have an art background. So I had trained as an artist, but was always kind of interested in the intersection, I guess, between human services and art and how art can be used to help people with their healing. So I did a lot of training and had a lot of focus on trauma, working with trauma and how you could use art to help to heal that trauma. Most recently, I was working in a domestic violence shelter with domestic violence and sexual assault victims. And so that did that for about 5 years. I was the crisis services program manager there. And so I feel like that really was probably, I would tell people I kind of have a PhD in domestic violence. Yeah. And, you know, obviously a lot of trauma there. So I really honed a lot of my skills, I think.
I know that the population that you're working with there is young adult women, which I love. And I just think about our society today. And I hear a lot about boys and young guys, and obviously, you know, they're impacted as well. But I don't think I've ever really had anybody on talking specifically about young women. So maybe you can just share what you see going on with that, because it is a pretty rough time, I think, for young ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we came about this young adult approach based on, I think, some of what we were seeing in society, some of what we were seeing in treatment, and just the trajectory of where the world was. This is a COVID world. This is a disruptive world. This is the traditional graduations, the traditional rite of passage into young adulthood was kind of disrupted. And so in that, with kids, with young adults being in that transformative time in life where they're trying to find their identity in high school, now they're expected to be accountable and responsible as adults. You know, it's a lot of let's slow down that whole conversation. And rather than shaming ourselves and saying, hey, you don't know what to do, and we feel guilty, we feel stuck, we feel frustrated, it's let's normalize the reality of, were you taught this stuff? Were you introduced to this? Do you have any exposure? Do you have any lived experience? And if the answer is no, then let's figure it out. Let's go ahead and show you how you take care of yourself. Let's show you how you learn the basics of life and living with roommates and that kind of stuff. Because what we see, we see way more anxiety than I ever anticipated, way more anxiety than I thought we would see. And a lot of it's because of the societal pressures, but also it's because it's young women. There's a ton of opportunities for women to be in recovery, but not everyone belongs in those environments. You know, they're not conducive to learning those skills to find productivity and find routine and re-engage in kind of that self-love and compassion. I'm looking at social media, I'm looking at my friends, I'm looking at the world, thinking I'm not good enough, thinking I can't give enough, I'm not contributing, and school is hard, and relationships are hard, and my parents are difficult. And it's all that stuff that we're able to explore, but we also normalize and neutralize that playing ground. And we get to say, hey, bring it all with you. Let's unpack it and lay it out and see how it lays, and then we'll figure out where you need to start.
The anxiety piece of it is so, I hear it all the time. I got into this because of my son, and he didn't have anxiety, so I haven't seen that up close, like in my home. What does that look like? Like if a parent is, you know, observing their young adult or even a teenage daughter, because I think sometimes we hear that and we go, oh, it's anxiety, but how does that manifest itself? Like, what would I be seeing in my home?
I think that's one of the more confusing components of it, because anxiety is a spectrum, depression is a spectrum, and depending on how I present and what I'm told by society, my therapist, my doctors, Wikipedia, WebMD, I have all these problems wrong with me. And anxiety is clearly the stress, the worry, the uncertainty, and it plays out in not taking care of myself, extra sleep or insomnia and no sleep. It's extra food or no food. It's also a spectrum within a spectrum. And we see a lot of avoidance. We see a lot of, I want to say, just like stepping back and withdrawing from productivity, because we're also afraid. The anxiety is, I won't be successful. The anxiety is, I'm not good enough. The anxiety is, I don't feel good. And I am tired because I am exhausted because life is hard. And now I have these expectations that mom and dad have, or my teachers have, or my partner has, of how I'm supposed to be present in life. And this is starting very young. This is 11, 12 years old when we're thinking about tweens and preteens. And then we have adolescence during the teenage years. And then that transition to young adulthood, it just presents differently based on maturity and lived exposure. You know, these young women are bringing in these experiences from high school, from middle school, of bullying and connection and identity and trying to figure that out. That's where the anxiety lies, is in, who am I? I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. My brother, my sister, my parents expect this. My teachers expect this, and I'm not functioning because I don't have confidence. I don't have self-esteem. I don't have, so it's anxiety, but it's also identity. It's anxiety. It's also connection. It's anxiety. And it's, I don't know what to do. Therefore, to gain control of my situation, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw. I'm going to go ahead and engage in unhealthy behaviors, that sort of stuff. And it looks like avoidance. It looks like manipulation. It looks like lying and stealing and cheating, because that's less disappointing than me not knowing what to do right now in my life and not being able to say, mom, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, because I'm going to disappoint mom. I'm going to make my mom feel bad. Right. And it's, I want to avoid that too. So it's a huge spectrum, Brenda, of how do I live and how do I do it right when there is no right or wrong way of doing it, and they avoid living.
It just sounds paralyzing. Like, as you're describing this, like just even me in my body, I'm like, it just sounds like so much. And you would get to a point, and we see this, and the parents I work with see this, is like you just said, either the acting out and all this behavior that makes it very difficult and confusing as a parent, because what we see is defiance and we see all this crazy. Yeah. And it's like, it's very hard to be compassionate for that, because you're seeing this craziness. But I think like what you just described helped me start to think more empathetically, like, oh my gosh, that would be a horrible way to live with all of that. And so I think it's great to know that if that is present, it doesn't have to be forever, that there are ways that you can work toward changing that. And it sounds like, and we can talk a little bit more about it, but it sounds like there's just some very practical skills and things that you can do to start building the confidence, the understanding that there is no right way. We all get to be different. But it just feels really paralyzing and horribly uncomfortable.
Which in my perspective makes sense that we would then avoid.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's not safe, if it's not what I want, then I'm going to do what I want, even though it's not productive, because I need comfort. I need some type of stability. And that means I'm surviving rather than truly engaging.
Yeah.
I think too, you know, the nervous system has a lot to do with it. So I think what's happening is there's this experience of overwhelm, and then whatever our default is for dealing with that, you know, our body is perceiving that as stress, as a threat. And so then it's going into collapse, right? And that's the depression where we're just sleeping all the time or not wanting to deal with reality, or we're going into that fight mode, right? So yeah, there's this whole physical piece to it as well, which is one of the things that we focus on here with our guests, is really talking about, you know, there are other things that are happening here. It's like you're saying, Brenda, it's not necessarily a choice. It's not that I'm just choosing not to participate. It's I'm having this very real physical response in my body right now. And I might not even be aware that that's what's happening. You know, we just had a meeting yesterday morning, and one of the students said, you know, we went on this ropes course, and I got through the whole course just fine. And then at the end, I just panicked. And she said, I kind of realized, wait a minute, I was actually pressing it down. You know, I was having this like physical response, not realizing it, kind of pushing it down. But then at the end, it just completely caught up to me. And I thought, whoa, that's great insight. You know, she just had this awareness, like, wait a minute. And so then we can work with that. Like, okay, so let's think about that. And what are the signs that you notice you are experiencing something? And that disconnect happens so easily. A lot of students kind of dissociate, you know, they're kind of moving away from it because it's uncomfortable for them. And that's one of the things Greg talks about a lot, is wanting that safety, that control, you know, having that sense of safety. And so how can we still have that when we're working with difficult emotions or working with challenging situations?
Right. Well, what comes to mind for me too is that it's really, in order to start to recognize those things, you have to have a certain level of, I want to call it stillness or distance away from social media and the, you know, all the stuff that our kids are dealing with today. If you're so bombarded with all of that, it's really hard to do the work to dig in and start to recognize, oh, I'm feeling this, because you don't know where all these feelings are coming from. So I think that's a really important part of it, is we sometimes want our kids like, well, just, you know, figure this out. But what we don't realize is they're living in a world that is just assaulting them constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to do anything in that, mm-hmm. you know, in that environment. There's a term that you guys had, which was adult lessons, which I love. I've never heard that before, and I absolutely love it. Maybe describe what that is. And, you know, parents are probably like, oh, yeah, I know. It's really hard. You know, how do we navigate that?
Oh, my goodness. I love the term. I love this idea of we transition from adolescence into adulthood. And what we find, whether we are in that adolescence or we're in later adulthood, even as parents, you know, we want different than what we have right now, right? We live in a world of immediacy. We live in a world of instant access. So to deconstruct adolescence, we look at adolescence, right? Starting again, 10, 11, 12, up to 18. And we're looking for we're looking for independence. We're looking for autonomy. We're looking for choice. We're looking for kind of identity. And that includes me exploring my world. And that requires some resources, it requires opportunities, it requires environments that allow for that to happen that we would typically associate with adulthood, you know, some of the freedoms and availability of doing so. And so we're adolescents wanting adulthood. Yet what we want when we're adults is, while we're living that life that all these kids dream about, is we are trying to get back to the reality of being a teenager and an adolescent, where we don't have responsibility. We don't have any accountability. We don't have to work because mom and dad are taking care of it. Mom and dad make the food. Mom and dad do the dishes. Mom and dad do the laundry. And I get to kind of be this free bird floating through my social environment of my friends and people I want to be with. And so there's this weird contrast between adolescence and adulthood, where we want the opposite. Brenda, I would love to be 5 years old forever. Because five, like when my kids were five, I got three children. When they were five, they were like the best kids. And as they grow up, they start figuring out that independence, and they figure out the autonomy, and they figure out how that they have these things that they just can't reach. And I'm able to sit here and say, hey, let me give you a little bit of advice.
Yeah.
And in that adolescence, when we're the later adolescence, right, the 17, 18, and even young adulthood, the last thing I want is for my mom breathing over my shoulder saying, hey, let me tell you about what happened when I was your age. Because it is such a different world today than when I was growing up, than when my parents were growing up. And I think one of the really cool things we do at Embrace around this adolescence is normalize the reality of that feeling of, I want this and I can't get it. My parents want it. They want to understand it. They can't get it either. So how do we come together and connect? So we focus on the relationship so that we can challenge that adolescence. But it is this desire to have kind of what is out of reach because of the role that we play, adolescence or adult.
Right. That it is, it's a cruel twist of fate that once you arrive on the other side, you're like, oh, wait, I want to go back.
Yeah. It's like when you're a young child, you fight the nap. You don't want to take a nap. And then when you're older, you're like, oh, like I would love a nap right now.
Totally.
I mean, it's that reality of, man, if only I could go back. It's hindsight's 20/20. Understanding that as an adult, there's things I would change as a young adult for sure. I would change a lot about my adolescence, the people I was with, the things I was doing, because I'm not super proud of them at this point in my life. Yet that's what got me here with some of those mistakes, some of those endeavors. And what we're seeing in this adolescence phase or like period of time is that they don't have exposure. They're not trying things out and failing. They have the anxiety that is crippling to the point of not trying anything else. So I want freedom. I'm not willing to go get it though. I can get a job. I can go to school. I can be productive. Yet I'm scared of failure because I've never had failure. And I think that's a stuck point. That's a sticking point for young adults. It's a stick point for parents. Because all we want is our kid to do it. But think about it for a minute, Brenda. It'd be so much easier for me to just do it for my child because I've already done it.
Yes.
And these adults are thinking the same thing. And I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to who have written reports and resignation letters and job offers and all these things for their young adult children, just like setting up a dentist appointment or getting a therapist, because it's something I don't know how to do. The world expects me to do it just because I'm 18. And the crazy part too is that in the United States, we look at 18 as being adulthood.
Right.
There are countries all over this world that look at adolescence being from the preteen 14 to 29 years old, because there's this transition period of experience and exposure where our frontal cortex and all that kind of brain science is not online. And we simplify it a little bit too much, I think, because the reality is if my kid knew what to do, they'd be doing it because they want that space. They don't want mom hovering. And it's also safer for me to say, mom and dad, go ahead and do it. I'm okay sacrificing. I'm okay not knowing because mom's always there.
Yeah.
So I use my hands as kind of this metaphor here where one hand over the other is kind of this helicopter hovering parent. And it makes sense from birth to 18 years old. It makes sense during adolescence. And what we do is we try to kind of intersect and disrupt that by removing some of those comforts, bringing the hands side by side, they're linear, understanding this is adult and an adult in these relationships. And we still gonna have that desire to cross over a little bit because mama bear is real. Mama bear will never go away.
Right.
Like, and that's kind of part of the reality, but it's also mama bear stops a lot of that progress because of mom's inability to navigate that anxiety.
Yes.
Because if my kid fails, that's my reputation, is a lot of the reality that we see with these students. What we teach and get to through our workshop is that it's okay for your kid to fail. Your kid is also scared of failing just as you are scared of them failing. And so we utilize the approach of challenging with curiosity, meaning I noticed this, can we chat about it, rather than, hey, listen to my advice. And we support with neutrality. We don't pick sides. We don't say, hey, you're doing it wrong because I did it different when I was your age. But it's just the simplicity of let's normalize and neutralize this playing ground and understand that it is hard. It is crippling to be a young adult. And I do not envy young adulthood. Like I'm a little bit beyond that, thankfully. And I think I look back at that and my life was so different. I feel like I was so much more productive. And these kids, they want to be productive. So then they start feeling like life gypped them and they got messed up. And so it's disappointing how kind of that anxiety leads to this crippling identity, because then it's helplessness. Then it's hopelessness. Then it's, I can't ever recover and mom and dad aren't there to help me. But it's more, I'm not open to my parents' help because they don't know how to help me either. So a lot of that neutralizing mom and dad so that they don't feel like they have to be defensive, and helping the child, the adult child at this point, understand it's okay to struggle. It's just really uncomfortable, and that's what we're avoiding.
Hi, I'm taking a quick break because there is a new resource for dads who have kids struggling with substance use and mental health, and it is a game changer. This is a private online community called The Woods. It's completely disconnected from social media, and it gives men the evidence-based tools and strategies to help them help their children make positive change. And it's also a place where they can be totally real about what's going on. The Woods is hosted and supported by battle-tested advisors who are all dads themselves, and they work with members to help them better navigate a really challenging time in life. So if you're a dad listening and wondering where all the other cool dads are who have these amazing yet challenging kids, The Woods is where you can meet up. And if you know of a dad or a stepdad who could use some additional scaffolding around them right now, you can let them know there's a private and supportive place to go. You can learn more at members.thewoodscommunity.org, and there's free trial, so there's no risk to check it out. Okay, now back to the conversation. The getting to being comfortable with being uncomfortable, both as the young person and as a parent, because correct. I think nobody, you know, the quote-unquote helicopter parent, I certainly was one, because nobody teaches you really, unless I guess you read the right book or you go to the right webinar or something.
There's no manual for parenting.
No one teaches you how to unvelcro yourself from your kids kind of over time so that they learn what they need to learn, and they don't feel like you just dump them. And I agree that 18 is just a number. Like, it's just, you have that birthday, just like you had your 17th birthday, just like you'll have your 19th birthday. So it seems incredibly arbitrary that we just like, okay, this is the day where you're supposed to know all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, parents I know are not intentionally trying to sort of strangle their kids' ability, you know, by doing all of this stuff. But we just have to be taught. And I know a lot of that comes down to communication, mm-hmm. As kind of the bedrock of everything that we do with our kids. And yeah. What are some of the things, I'm just curious, because I see a lot of communication landmines. And I'm wondering what ones you guys see and what ones typically are tripping up your guests. I'm going to call them guests because I believe that.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's interesting because the same obstacles are tripping up the young adult and the adult parents. And I think it's the reality of not having hard conversations. I think it's, we avoid conflict by brushing it under the rug, and then we just pretend like it's gone. And then when I get triggered, I get pissed off. I get so angry, so aggressive, so overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. So it leads back to the anxiety of withdrawal. It's having hard conversations and addressing conflict. Kids aren't going to like it. People don't like addressing conflict. They want to also avoid it. So the bigger piece is I like to let stuff blow up. I like to let them have hard emotions and trigger some of those experiences, so that we have something to work on, because students and guests come in, parents come in too, fake it till you make it mentality, right? If I can just outlast this therapist, I'm not gonna have to talk at all because the therapist is gonna talk enough for me. Mom and dad do the same thing. And so it's holding accountability on the family relationship, not just the young adult and not just the parents. We can't have this divisive relationship and expectation that mom and dad show up, but the kid just kind of floundering, hanging out in the background, getting a free vacation. It's also, let's help you understand what the child is doing to build credibility. Let's help you understand what is happening so that as we move forward, we are growing, we are building, we are connecting, rather than pushing against each other, fighting against each other. And so a lot of it is the basics of communication, right? It's learning how to do active listening, learning, like listening to hear rather than listening to respond or communicate. It's a little bit of like slowing down the conversation and talking about boundaries and expectations, as well as the student and the child being able to say, hey, this is what I'm able to do. These are my capacities. And mom and dad saying, hey, let's meet you where you're at. rather than saying, hey, you're 18, you're an adult, go fly. The kid's like, mom, what if I don't fly? And the mom's like, you probably won't, you know? And so it becomes this weird conversation of sabotage, essentially, because mom's going to be uncomfortable being an empty nester. And if we slow down that conversation and say, hey, where are we all at? Like, let's get a whiteboard. Let's do some brainstorming. And let's talk through this experience that mom and dad are having and then talk about the child's experience. It's not that different.
Yeah.
The emotions, the anxiety, the fear, the uncertainty, it's across the board. And it hasn't seemed to change much depending on whether that is an only child or not. Older and younger siblings are also battling the same because personalities are different. And the motivations, the things that trigger us are different based on who we are in our life. And so I am one that is very blunt. I'm very direct. I'm very clear. And I'm one that's gonna stir that pot a little bit to get things going. And I'm going to poke that bear and I'm going to make sure things blow up. Because kids can come in and pretend. Kids can come in. Young adults can come in. Parents come in. And if I don't create some emotional experience for them that's different than what they're used to, then they are seeking safety and control doing the same stuff. And I can have all the cliche phrases, right? Like, you know, you should have known better. You shouldn't have done that. This is what parenting is really about. And read all the books, all the self-help books. They're all out there and they're all okay. But if you read a book and don't apply it, it's the same as learning a lesson in an argument with your child and coming back to have the same conversation.
Which we do a lot.
It's let's figure out where your child's at. Let's figure out where your kid's at in this conversation. And maybe slow down a little bit and gain some perspective. Because we're expecting this child, this big kid, to communicate effectively, address what is happening, and have resolution. And that's because they're 18, because they're an adult. You know, and I think if my family didn't teach me that, then where am I going to learn that? Because school hasn't taught that, right?
For sure, yeah.
Relationships usually don't teach that. We usually run and avoid and placate and all this stuff because it's easier and it's more comfortable. And so a big part that we do is we create discomfort in the environment saying you're not at home. So we take them away from home in a new environment. We take technology. We don't have phones and computers and all that kind of stuff unless it is therapeutically appropriate. And that's based on conversations and opening up. If you don't open up, well, it's hard for me to help. But it's also understanding that they must choose. Guest, young adult, parent, they must choose to engage just as they must choose to eat their food and write letters and go to work and do all that stuff. And so in that approach for neutrality, it is we're not just going to let off our kid and release that pressure. We're going to maintain that pressure and make sure the right lesson is learned and communicate clearly and effectively along the way to make sure we understand. And that's active listening, conflict resolution, a lot of, are you ready for advice? Do you want some feedback? And being able to hear no. I think teaching parents and kids, big kids, young adults, how to hear and say no is something that is missing as well because we don't have boundaries. And then when I say no, I'm afraid of disappointing someone else. So I learned very early that no means no from my mom. And that has been the piece that's played out in a very strange way because assaults and abuse are all over the place. And that's never where I learned to say no. It's when there's boundaries, when there's things that I'm not comfortable with or okay with, can I say no? And that when I hear no, it's okay to hear no.
Yeah, you know, so it's important. It's
such a simple piece. And when you're a kid, you're fighting no. Mom says no. If I fight, have a big enough tantrum, my mom's going to say yes. I learned this over time. I challenge manipulation in so many ways, Brenda, because I think it's very derogatory. I don't believe it gives credit to the student and their struggle. And so I talk about self-preservation more than manipulation. Self-preservation, meaning I'm doing the best I can. And then in that neutrality, we get to tell the student, hey, mom and dad are surviving. They are working on self-preservation just like you are. They are trying to make it through. Mom and dad are not trying to control you. Mom and dad understand helicopter parenting and they don't want that either. So how do we slow that down and come together becomes addressing hard things and having very difficult conversations that no one wants to have, yet I tend to thrive in those bad boys.
Well, it takes somebody to stir the pot, like you said. But I think it's great to have a safe place to stir the pot because mm-hmm. we, you know, as parents, I was one of these, a conflict avoider. And that could be a whole nother episode on why that is that we don't have time for today. But I think a lot of people know that that is a reality. I don't want to create conflict with my kids. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how that's going to feel. And so you're right, what you said earlier about it just sort of builds and builds and builds until all of a sudden now you've got an explosion. And then that's a mess to deal with. So the idea of teaching us how to have those conversations, stir the pot a little bit in a safe place where you can then guide us through that conversation to say, okay, look, we can have this and the world didn't end. Like maybe somebody's feelings got hurt, or maybe afterward we feel so much better because now I understand why you're doing what you're doing, or, mm-hmm. you know, there's context for it. So I think that's really, really important. What is sort of this therapeutic wellness, and how does this differ from a traditional, just like 30-day inpatient experience?
Well, I think the first part is choice. The young adults have to choose to be here. They have to choose to participate. They have to choose to participate if they go to an inpatient facility, but ours is an invitation, inviting them in to really slow down, to intentionally put aside distractions rather than me saying, hey, your phone goes in a box, you're never going to see it again. It goes in this dark closet. No one knows where it's at. Because I did inpatient psych for 2.5 years, and I get that. It's scary. There's locks on the doors, and it's all chaotic, and it's, you must do this or else there's consequences. And we say, hey, the consequence that you're already experiencing is the discomfort of having to navigate life and not knowing where you're going. Let's soften that a little bit and focus on 5 very simple pillars of lifestyle habit. One being movement and fitness, getting some type of movement in your day, nutrition and culinary skills. So learning how to cook, feed yourself in healthy ways, and then practicing that. Mindfulness and yoga. So reconnecting mind and body, being able to slow down, take those breaths, recreation and adventure, getting outside, getting vitamin D and vitamin K and sunshine and oxygen, all those great things that we need that we don't believe we need. And then the last is self-care and stress management, which is our therapeutic pillar. And so as we look at this stuff and we teach it, it's nothing new. We are not we're cutting edge in our approach. The message is the same thing we've been hearing for 20 years. Parents have been hearing it for 50 years. Of you got to move, you got to eat, you got to sleep. And we just create that safe place, as you've identified, Brenda, for where we can have hard conversations and really get down to the nitty gritty of what's not working. Because if I have that conversation at home, it's staring me right in the face. My mom's not working, my dad's not working, my school's not working, my work's not working. And so we're able to pull away and say, hey, let's focus on lifestyle as a whole, not shining on that big problem, because we can take care of that problem and then another problem pops up. But if we can unwire some of these behaviors and habits that you have around your lifestyle, regardless of what it is, we can then apply yourself in a new environment, giving a little bit of exposure and experience to new things, new habits, new skills that you have not been taught, quite literally, in a space where it's easy to practice with like-minded other young women who are not being forced to be there. I cannot tell you how many people have anxiety because they don't think they have control, whether that's with us or at school or at work. And the one thing they want is control. And I'm not interested in getting in the power struggle around control. So when a student comes to me and they've been there for a day, an hour, a week, a month, and they say, I want to go home, I say, great, I hear you want to go home. Can we talk about it? Because if you're really going to go, make a choice. Don't just create chaos because that's what you're used to. I get that you're away from mom and dad. I get that you're away from your phone, and that's really scary. Let's normalize. Let's support with neutrality. It's not me against you. I'm an ally. I'm a support. I'm a resource. Let's talk through this. Mom and dad have to make that decision with you. Or if mom and dad are involved, you got to make that choice for yourself. I'm going to make sure you know the consequences. I'm going to make sure you know the good, the bad, and the ugly of some of these choices you make, whether that's substance use or wrong relationships or the wrong work environment or the wrong food. But it's not about shame. We focus so little on shame where we're at because the world is used to that. The world is so used to seeing what's on social media and what my friends are posting that we say, let's just put social media away for a little bit. Let's learn how to breathe. Let's learn how to feed yourself and eat. And let's get outside and get some sunshine. Let's experience life different. And it's still familiar. It's still safe because they've been outside before. They've eaten food before and they've moved their bodies. But it's where are you at in this process? And what do you want moving forward? is that therapeutic wellness component of we are reestablishing and recreating life. We are not able to go back in the past and change what happened when you were 15 or 18 or 20. It's let's reframe that, including mom and dad to whatever level you believe is appropriate, and help them understand where you're at so that you can make a choice. So lots of choice, lots of reflection. Everything becomes therapeutic because we're always processing, debriefing, pre-briefing, because there's still drama in life, because it's a bunch of young people who don't know each other and have never been here before. So that's a huge piece, but it's about wellness. It's about building a lifestyle and habits that you can take with you. So everything is translatable and it's simple enough that you can do it at home with or without people, with or without a gym. You don't need a chef. You don't need a trainer yet. You're going to learn how to move your body and feed yourself so you can take it home.
It sounds like such a nice break from the sort of chaos that we live in. I'm like, oh, this sounds really lovely. maybe I need to go visit.
Absolutely.
Because it sounds great. But I would think that the peer aspect of it has to be really impactful for a young woman to see sort of the contrast of like, oh, this is where I am. This is where this person is. And maybe she knows how to cook and I don't know how to cook, but I really know how to move my body and she has no idea how to move her body. And like there, it just feels like there would be a really cool dynamic as they're interacting with each other in that way. And just learning like, oh, you know, I think we've forgotten sometimes that it's okay to be a student of life and be learning this stuff, that we don't have to know it all. Like, where would I ever learned to do any of this? My son said that to me when he came back from wilderness. He said, Mom, how come no one ever taught me any of this stuff? He was so shocked. He was like, where was I supposed to learn about radical acceptance or any of this stuff? And I was like, I don't know. You know, it's so I think it's so good just to say to our kids, it's okay that you don't know this stuff. It's all right. We all have to learn it together. And that can be really freeing to a young person. Absolutely. I wonder, are there any myths, like you guys see this every day and you're dealing with families and parents and young people. Is there a myth that you think is out there about either this transition into adulthood or about young people needing some of this instruction that you would just like for once and for all you would like to clear up?
I think, Brenda, I think you've stated it once. It's okay to not know. It's okay to not be okay becomes a very familiar motto. Because as a young adult, we have this pressure on us, regardless of when we've grown up, that the world wants us to be perfect. And so we try to be perfect. And when we can't, we get stuck. And I think just as young adults can say it, parents can say it too. It's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I cannot help you with this. It's okay to be vulnerable and say, I see that you're struggling. I would wonder what we can do together to get through this. Because it's going to be a different experience. And the minute the student says, hey, Mom, I don't want your advice, it becomes a battle and a conflict. And so if we slow down and we said, hey, I see you, I hear you, what do you need? Rather than, hey, have you tried this and have you tried that? Because that becomes part of that dialogue that we all are very familiar with, regardless of where that comes from, because if that's what people know how to do. People know how to say, oh yeah, on this movie once I saw this, or I heard this once from Brenda, or I heard this once on a podcast, or when my kid was in the wilderness, I heard this.
Yes.
We're used to parroting that stuff. We are not used to saying no, and I don't know, because those are meaning you're not doing, or maybe the message of, you're not doing enough because you don't know. And I want people to understand it's okay to struggle. It's okay to be stuck. It's okay to feel triggered. And it's also okay to challenge those experiences, because that's the growth opportunity. If we continue to stay stuck and we say, hey, I'm stuck, and you stay there, that's a lot of choice, you know? And if you say, I'm stuck and I need to do something about it because I don't feel good, you can also say, you deserve to feel better. You deserve to feel heard. You deserve to feel seen. And then that requires you stop doing what you're doing and do something different. And if you don't know what to do, start with something else. Like start reaching out to someone. Call me, call Brenda, call, do what you need to do, because there are people out here who are the experts and we don't know where they are either. becomes a very real truth.
Yeah. It's very freeing to have the ability just to say, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know how to help you, but I know there are people who do. Because I also made the mistake of saying, what I would keep saying, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? And my poor son is like, I have no, right? He didn't know what he needed. And so I don't know either. Yeah, I feel like we can put pressure on them as well. But to say, wow, I don't know, but I know there are people who do. Would you be willing to help, like, figure out some of this stuff together? Could be really powerful. Just in wrapping up, is there, you know, parents are so stressed out.
Yes.
You know, somebody's going to be listening today who's got a daughter or a son who's really struggling and not functioning well and nothing's working out. And like you said, life's not working, relationships aren't working, food's not working. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that parent in a position like that who's just at their wit's end?
Oh, there's a lot that I would.
I know.
There's a lot that I would say. There's a ton of encouragement. There's a ton of direct feedback. There's a ton of thought. And I think the big thing that I want you all to hear, if you're listening right now, is that you deserve support. You deserve help. You deserve to feel better. And you're doing a fantastic job. This is not supposed to be done alone. This is not supposed to be done as a solitary family. It's okay to use resources, and I encourage you to reach out for that support. Also, slow down and take time for you.
Yes.
Figure out how to prioritize peace, joy, and rest, and it will figure itself out. Maybe not the way we anticipate, and we know it will sort itself out.
Yeah. Karen, do you have any thoughts for a parent who might be listening with a very frazzled inside?
Yeah, so I definitely would echo what Greg said. I think it's important to put the focus back on yourself, because I think what happens is we get so wrapped up in, you know, what our child is doing and so focused on their behaviors and their experience, wanting them to have a certain experience, right? And then not necessarily wanting that for ourselves, we're forgetting about ourselves. And so I think it's really important to be honest with how you're feeling. And, you know, I love that what Greg was saying about, you know, I don't have all the answers, and being able to let your child see that you're a human being. Mm-hmm. You're a human being. And so exactly, sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes, you know, I don't know what to say, but I think showing up with that humility and that honesty, kids really respond to that. I mean, I see that here with the work that we're doing with our guests. You know, they respond to that when we're honest with them and say, you know, sometimes I don't know and it's okay, but we'll figure it out. But I do think, you know, remembering to put the focus on yourself and making sure that you're taking care of yourself, and remembering too that everything changes. And the things that we get so worked up about. I mean, I remember when, you know, my son was in kindergarten and we get all these calls from the teacher. He's talking back to the teacher, you know, he's not listening. And I remember just thinking, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. You know, my kid's not doing what he should be doing in school. And then, you know, 3 months later, it was a completely different, you know, it was completely different. He had a different teacher. The teacher loved him. Everything was fine. And I looked back and I thought, well, wow, you know, here I got so worked up and worried about, you know, this is the end of the world and this is so terrible. And it changed and it will change. So no matter how dark things may seem, it will change at some point. And so I think it's just holding on and watching for that change.
Beautifully said. I love that. I'm a big fan of self-care and self-compassion and perspective, like you said, not to get so zoomed in with that, you know, narrow lens on this very moment, but to pull back a little bit, and also to just recognize what's going right. I think a lot of times there are things that our kids are doing that are really great and amazing. And we go, yeah, 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 but look at this big hairy wart over here, right? And we forget all of the amazing things that they do and that they are. So that's really, really great perspective. Thank you so much for hopping on today and just talking about some of this. It's so good to get your perspective and to know that there are people out there who are so passionate about helping our young people, because we need that. We need people who know how to do that and really find your own joy in doing that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Brenda. I appreciate you having us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that is it for today. If you would like to get the show notes for this episode, you can go to brendazane.com/podcast. All of the episodes are listed there, and you can also find curated playlists there. So that's very helpful. You might also want to download a free ebook I wrote. It's called Hindsight: 3 Things I Wish I Knew When My Son Was Misusing Drugs. It'll give you some insight as to why your son or daughter might be doing what they are. And importantly, it gives you tips on how to cope and how to be more healthy through this rough time. You can grab that free from brendazane.com/hindsight. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. And I hope that these episodes are helping you stay strong and be very, very good to yourself. And I will meet you right back here next week.